Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin. Breathe in, breathe out, me and more. Breathe in, breathe out, never mind. It was time, number nine, let my lies be line. With a death wish, be right, didn't help. No name on the guest list, hold on, I'm destined.
Welcome in as we continue out here at East River 9. It's just me until noon, AJ back in the studio. Although Michael Carroll will join us at 11:30, and I can't guarantee that this show will be less chaotic than the previous show, but I'm pretty sure it will be, because with Lance at the helm, sometimes you get chaos, and that's what we got. So we will try to bring a level of normalcy back. But we'll see. I can't promise it. And after me, it'll be Big Sarge. And then after him, it'll be Will Kunkel filling in for Jeremy with Joe George. We're out here all day at East River 9. I am in better light, I think, as far as the video is concerned. Lexi is filming her own video for social media. Hopefully she gets a good shot. Lexi's out here. Caitlin, not Skyler, is out here, and also Niall remains out here, who made a good point, because Lance Zierlein, misnamed Caitlin, tried to walk out here with one of their cups. Like, they gave us water for the day in cups, and he tried to walk out of here with it, and Niall pointed out that Lance will leave a snot rag in the studio, but will try to take someone else's cup. That's who he is as a person, as I said, chaos. But we're good to go until noon. And as I mentioned, Michael Carroll will join us at 11:30. He has seen The Odyssey. He'll give us a non-spoilery review of that. And The Odyssey is a perfect thing for me to watch. I know the story, but I'm not so locked in that I know all the beats of this story. But I know, at least going in, that it is compelling. And now I have Christopher Nolan directing it. The Odyssey hasn't been done so many times that the story has been beaten to death. You know, they made the movie Troy, which is somewhat Odyssey, somewhat the Iliad, and that was like 20 years ago now, 20 plus years ago, I think now. And this, with an acclaimed director and actors we all recognize and all the money thrown into it, and at least from the reviews, seems to be a hit. That's what I'm looking for. An event movie to go watch in the theaters, and I'm going to be doing that right after the show. But before we get to all that, let's talk about some things we got to this morning. This question popped up because the Astros are back in action tonight. They have the Orioles in town with Peter Lambert on the mound. And the name Peter Lambert being a prominent member of your baseball team probably wasn't what you were looking for to start the year, and that speaks to how the season has gone. They're under 500. They're still in the race because of how bad the AOS and the AL overall is. But what's the future for this team? It led to some questions this morning about what should be done, particularly if a lame duck manager and lame duck GM are no longer a part of the organization. What's the next move? And are the Astros going to be a team who does the patching of a roster for the next couple years? Will they try to find veteran, I won't even say bargains, but at least veterans on short-term deals that they've done, particularly at first base, to keep whatever they think this is going while keeping some of your stalwarts around but never really progressing, being, I won't say they need to be the 2026 Astros going forward, but maybe they're going to be the 2024, 2025 Astros who aren't really contenders, who are either scraping by to make the playoffs or they don't make the playoffs, period. But anyone who recognizes what a good team looks like and a contender looks like because of all the success this team has had here, they don't see it in the teams in the future. Which gave me this thought, and I'll ask this question to people. You can consider it at home or on the road, or maybe you call in at 713-780-3776. If you were given no guarantees about what would happen, new GM, new manager, bake that into to the question, would you support a teardown because at least there was a chosen direction? And this team has seen, at least the city has seen, a teardown work to great success. Now you got to hire the right GM and then the manager along with it. But if the Astros said, you know what, yeah, our owner has said that as long as he's here, we're contending, the window is open. But the window may be open, but it's only slightly ajar, and we don't see a path inside. So we're gonna maybe not go complete what we did over a decade ago, where we're losing 100-plus games, but there's going to be a clear turn in how we operate. We are not going to sign veterans on short-term deals because we have an opening. And if we have to trade a Josh Hader, we'll do it. If we're not going to bring back Jeremy Pena, we'll trade him. We are going to try to find prospects that can lead us into the future. Because at the moment, and it was pointed out through one of the tweets that came in at the time that we were discussing it this morning, there doesn't appear to be a lot in the immediate pipeline. Like, Bryce Matthews is the one current major leaguer for the Astros that was a part of Dana Brown's first draft class. And Bryce Matthews is still a young player, but he ain't exactly what we've become accustomed to with young players when it comes to showing up on the major league roster and being big-time contributors. And you know that's a dude. We don't know any dudes, or we're not sure about any of these young players so far. And young is certainly a relative term. In baseball, I get it. It's different from the other sports where young can be 18, 19, at least when it comes to basketball. Normally, a young player in baseball can still be considered young at like 24, 25. But when you look at Bryce Matthews, who's a local guy, he's 24 years old. And he's currently hitting under 200. And because of your lack of talent in the outfield, he'll get time. And now he can be an infielder as well, but when you're healthy, and that has certainly been a problem, you're set there. Correa, Pena, Altuve for as long as he's going to be here. And first base is Christian Walker. So Bryce Matthews has to find his time in the outfield, and he's hitting under 200. Cam Smith is one of those other options that you acquired in the trade. There hasn't been the pop, certainly not the consistent pop as far as, okay, that's a guy as well. So they have what you would consider young players. They simply don't have the next one. And how long can we keep doing this thing of, we're going to keep trying, but it's clear that this team is one that is benefiting from the lack of competition surrounding them more than them being a real good team. So I am interested if people want to get in on that. 713-780-3776. Would you support a teardown just because it's a clear direction? I'm not giving you guarantees. I'm not saying 2 years from now you're going to see the 2015 version of the Astros who show up and you see these young players and you go, okay, we got some here. You don't know, but what you feel like you do know, at least I feel like I know, that the path they're going down now, it's a path to diminishing returns, and eventually all your best players will leave anyway, and then you're left with nothing as far as real guys left and any real belief that this is going to turn around. So maybe a bit of a bleak question to start the second half of the year. But separating yourself from that, there's still a potential playoff chase to be in and a potential divisional win, and I'm not advocating for the teardown this offseason, or at least, excuse me, this season before the trade deadline. I'm not even saying trade Josh Hader at the moment, because if the belief is we're not going to put that in the hands of an outgoing GM, I'm with it. Let the new guy make that determination, or woman. Let the new person make that determination. If it comes down to it, I wouldn't want Dana Brown making decisions right now, because if anything can be judged by, if you want to judge what he did this offseason by the acquisitions, those pitchers that he acquired, I would think you're well within your rights not to trust him to make any big trades before his time with the Astros potentially comes to an end. So Astros, Orioles to start the second half, fully in the race. We'll see how long they stay in the race with only one team above 500 in the American League West. All right, we'll go to break. AJ and I here till noon. At least I am here at East River 9. He is back in studio. We'll keep you going till noon, and then Sarge will follow us. Remember, Michael Carroll, the host of Comicast at 11:30. We will be back.
Burns.
You're back inside the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
So as we closed out the last show, Pena held for a while. I mentioned we'd get to Pena, and Lance never did. So, Pena, if you want to get in, you can. At the time you want to talk Texans, we'll see what it is this time if you do come back. But you're welcome to join us. We have another caller who did not give us a name. They just said they want to talk NFL, which puts us on alert. AJ's ready. I'm ready. This caller, anonymous, maybe I'll recognize the voice, wants to talk some NFL. What's up?
Hey, Joe, it's Keith, man. I gave him a name. What's up?
What's up? What's up, Keith?
Hey, NFL question. You know, training camp starts basically next week. You know, what's going on with Stephon Diggs and Tyreek Hill? Why haven't the Baltimore Ravens signed any of these guys? We've got Zay Flowers is a true one, but it's a pretty good fall off after Flowers with Bateman and then the two rookies out of USC and Indiana, and that's about it. Like, we need Stephon Diggs or Tyreek Hill badly. And also, if we live in Houston, where are we supposed to watch the Odyssey?
There are several theaters, but IMAX isn't at the... I talked about yesterday. There is no top-of-the-top tier IMAX here in Houston. You're going to have to make a choice. The Marquee has an IMAX that's probably the best. I did this yesterday, Keith. You can watch Odyssey anywhere. There are plenty of theaters. Just a question of what you want to see it on. Or you can just drive to Dallas, like a couple of people I'm aware of are going to do. And as far as your NFL question, why isn't your favorite team signing Tyreek Hill? Well, there was a time in either late September or early October last year where Tyree's leg was pointing in the wrong direction. Has anyone seen Tyreek Hill even do the videos where he's running around, running routes? I mean, my algorithm doesn't show me Tyreek Hill stuff anymore. He doesn't play for anything, but doesn't play for the team I grew up rooting for as a kid, so I don't see any of that. So that's probably your first answer. Tyreek Hill, knee pointing in the wrong direction, ligaments ripped apart. Where is he as far as his recovery is concerned? Seems like something, if we go by what happened to Tank Dell, takes longer than the normal ACL. So that's your answer there. Stephon Diggs, who's looking for everything that follows Stephon Diggs around? He's got another legal situation that may follow him. I don't know the legitimacy of it. I just know it's there. So is anyone looking for what has become a possession, non-big play receiver on their roster right now? And what is Stephon Diggs asking for? You can probably tell his status in the league right now when Odell Beckham is on an active roster at the moment. Braxton Berrios is on one, and Stephon Diggs isn't. He's got to figure some things out, and maybe an NFL team for the next thing to come up before they sign him. Look, Keith, you root for a team that signs receivers that either have little to nothing left or at least were big names at one point, and you're trying to squeeze the last bit of production out of them. So I get why you're talking and thinking about Tyreek Hill and Stephon Diggs, but no one else is. Who else anywhere particularly with Tyreek Hill because of the injury. Who else is thinking about bringing in Tyreek Hill right now? That's a wait and see. Stephon Diggs may just be, hey, you're more, at least you have more trouble around you than you're worth. That's all. Like, the Ravens, if I'm a Ravens fan, I've had my fill of the street free agent wide receiver who we will have for a year, who won't do much, but will win a day of media coverage, and then we'll go about, then you'll move on. Perhaps for the Ravens, they need to go find a real number one. You said Zay Flowers is one. He's not a real number one. Zay Flowers is a fine player, but he's not a number one wide receiver. That's not who he is. The Ravens, it would do them some favors if they find one. But it's rare that a 5'9 receiver under 190 pounds can be a number one. He's a good player. 2,000-yard seasons, back-to-back years. But he probably would be... could fall into the category of what Stephon Diggs called himself, the best number two in the league. Zay Flowers is one of the number twos you can say is a top five number two, maybe better than that. But the Ravens have not done a great job finding young receivers to develop and be part of their team for multiple years. Rashad Bateman they've hung on to, never lived up to potential. Zay Flowers is a hit, but there's a certain level that you're going to get from Zay. And when you start to look around the league, and we did the thing yesterday, AJ, with the top receivers in football. The Cowboys had two in the top eight. Nico Collins came in at eight. Zay Flowers isn't one of those guys. I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown, not a taller receiver, but plays in the slot quite a bit. If you want to call, you can call him a number one because of what he means to the Lions. He wouldn't be considered normally a true number one, but that's what we're talking about. You're talking about a smaller receiver being a number one. The Ravens don't have that. And have they ever really had one since Lamar's been there over the course of his time there? They have been built around his ability to make plays, and then you throw in the run game, and then you double down on that by bringing in Derrick Henry. That's how they're built, and your tight ends have been good too. All right, we'll go to break. Thanks for the call, Keith. You do love an out-of-work, aging star whose name you've heard of before. I'm sure Stephon Diggs will get a job someplace. Maybe you'll be thrilled if the Ravens sign him. All right, we're here at East River 9. We're in the Birdies. You call it a clubhouse, a restaurant, a bar. It's all those things. And the TVs are going right now as the Open is continuing. You can come out here and watch that today, but also the World Cup this weekend, where you have the third place match and then the final, which will be on Sunday. So this is the place to go. You want to play some golf, then step into the clubhouse and then watch the best that sports has to offer. Birdies is a place for you. We'll go to break. We will be back.
You're back inside the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
So we had the call from Keith. He was wondering where the best place is to watch the Odyssey. And Dustin chimed in. Dustin and I, along with Manny, we did a podcast years ago now. Well, has it been a decade? It's been a long time now since we did it. But in my conversations with him at the time, I knew, I found out he was big into not only IP and some of the things that are dominating pop culture right now, but also how things looked and what got certain productions to look a certain way. And he is saying right now, community chiming in, the ESPN 975 community, he's saying, because we don't have a true 70mm IMAX film projector here in town, the screen is important, and right now, true IMAX screens exist at the Regal Marquee off I-10, and the newest IMAX theater is Regal at Greenway Plaza. Those are the two best places if you want to watch this movie in the way it was intended to watch. Nolan would say the 70 millimeter IMAX is the way you should watch it, but we don't have access to that unless we decide to drive to Dallas. So there it is, Keith. Dustin helps you out there. The Regal Marquee off I-10 or the Regal at Greenway Plaza for the as close as possible full-on the Odyssey experience. Okay, let's get to what's happening in Vegas. At the time of the NBA draft, AJ and I were talking on the air about what the Rockets should do. Should they move up to draft one of the prospects who fell out of the first round? Or are they going to stay where they are? They did move up. They didn't get one of the guys who were potential first-round picks in most people's eyes, but they did get Bruce Thornton, who so far in the Summer League is getting really good reviews. Another good shooting night last night. Now, some of this, if you see the counting numbers, you're looking at points scored. Some of it is based off of what they're doing in Summer League right now, where if you go to the free throw line, depending on what shot got you there, or that could be three free throws, or at least one free throw is representative of three free throws, or if it's a regular shooting foul inside the arc, you only take the one free throw, you make it, it counts as 2 points. They're trying to, I guess, speed up the games. And then that rule goes away in the final 2 minutes of the half, of both halves, I think. So, for example, Bruce Thornton, I think, went 3 for 5 yesterday from the free throw line. If those are all 2-point shots, that means he scored 6 points. So some of the numbers are a bit more inflated than you would normally see in a regular NBA game, but he is playing well. AJ, have you seen much of him? And if you have, what do you think?
I've gotten to see some highlights and stuff. I haven't been able to watch a lot of games just because of timing and stuff. But no, he's looked nice. He's shown some nice flashes. I guess the biggest question mark with me is just, like, if he is, like, in the rotation, how much? Because you have Fred coming back. You have now Marcus Smart. And even Bogdanovich to Mr. Ann Reed. So I wonder what that looks like, how he made the plan.
Yeah, there's some burst there. We'll see what it looks like against real NBA competition. But what you'll notice about him, if you haven't seen him, because you're not watching Summer League, and I get it. Whether you don't tune into the Rockets until it's preseason or maybe you just only watch in the regular season, if you do get to see Bruce Thornton play minutes, he's a strong guy. He's not very tall for an NBA player. Yeah, I think he's about 6 feet tall. But you're going to notice the strength, which has allowed him to play through contact, and that strength will allow him to get to spots. Whether the length of established NBA players causes him some issues when he's playing against them, we'll figure that out. But, you know, he said that this is who I've been my entire life. I found a way my entire life, despite my lack of relative height. So at least his first test, at least for us to see, we'll see certainly what the Rockets feel about him as he goes through practices. But as far as what we've been able to see, can't fault the pick at all. And Rafael Stone has had a history of finding guys outside the lottery that have contributed. He's not perfect, the Ty Washingtons of the world and the Garubas, but he does acquire talent. It looks like Bruce Thornton can be a guy. And to AJ's point, the question will be how much of a guy can he be? How many minutes can he play with a veteran top two, if you want to consider Marcus Smart ahead of Reed Sheppard, and then you throw in Reed Sheppard as your young promising prospect, who was a top five pick. So there seems to be at least a question, and the question's brought on by how good Bruce Thornton has been about can he get minutes in the NBA. Thankfully, he has done enough through Summer League to not shut down that where he appears not to be ready. And you take it with what you should take it with, the grain of salt that it is Summer League, but it's nice to know that he wasn't overwhelmed. In fact, he's playing well in Vegas Summer League, which continues. I think it goes to the weekend as they have their final games with non-playoffs, as they'll call it, and then we'll wrap up Summer League as we close out their time in Vegas. AJ, the question popped up this morning at the end of our previous show about the LeBron decision. And this is less about where he plays, because wherever he plays is his decision, and we'll keep it moving. It's not that big of a story to me. But you think this is pure LeBron wanting attention, or do you seriously think he doesn't know where he wants to play? Or where he's going to play?
The first one. Like, I mean, all he's wanted to do, and I'm not a LeBron fan, so you can probably kind of tell that in the tone. Like, just control the narrative. I thought of something yesterday. It would be funny if Wade just retired.
You know, I hope, because I don't really have a feeling one way or the other, but it would be the most interesting of all the decisions, and just for him to say, you know what, whatever you think about me is not true. I don't need the going away send off. I'm just gonna call it quits. I would actually respect it more. Now, the people of Cleveland may be a little upset, considering all the time he spent there this offseason and the belief he was going to join them. And there's some other teams certainly in the mix. But if he decided I'm done, I'd be good with it. At this point, he has proven all he can prove, at least in my eyes. I don't know how much more he can do. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he will choose a team. He does have the team I root for outside of the Rockets, the Heat of the team I root for. If my team had a legitimate playmaker, no. I don't care for the LeBron experience. I don't have any emotional attachment to him, even though he played for my team, made a couple four finals, won a couple titles. I don't look back at that time and go, man, I wish I could have more of LeBron on my team. If my team was more complete, I'd say no. But I know he could help them win more games, so it is a pure pragmatic. He could help my team win. I'm not a LeBron fan. I'm not a LeBron hater. He and his story hold very little interest to me. Once his time is over in the NBA, whenever that is, I don't think I'm going to feel anything other than it happens to everybody. And that's how it'll be. I've never been a guy who follows a player from place to place. I've never got that attached to anyone. Like, my favorite player when I was a young adult, was Dwayne Wade. And when Dwayne Wade retired, it was like, you know, about time. Great Miami Heat player, Hall of Famer, accomplished a lot. But I didn't feel anything. Maybe I'm dead inside. I don't know. I don't know what that is. But I don't have that. My emotion comes from the team I root for, not really the players on it. And sure, they're individuals, and I understand. As human beings, when they're not playing, I hope good things happen to them. I don't want bad things to happen to people. But my only attachment to them is the fact that they happen to either sign with my team or are drafted by them. And once it's over, it's like, I'm not rooting against you as far as your life is concerned, but there's just going to be another player in your place, and then he'll wear the uniform of the team I root for, and then I'll root for him until he goes to another place. Like, there are players I don't like as far as who they play for, but that's based off of them playing for a rival. And that's about it. So, LeBron, the following a player and being a fan of a player, I understand it's part of being a fan, but it's never been my thing. He's not the start of it, because you probably associate Jordan with this particular way of going about being a fan. I'm going to root for the player more than I'm rooting for the team he's on. And Jordan, for the bulk of his career, and certainly the most important parts of his career, was a Bull. So you could just be a Bulls fan and be a Jordan fan. LeBron was the one when he switched. It led to this, I think. He's a member of the Heat. I'm going to root for him. He's a member of the Lakers. I'm going to root for him. He's a Cav again. I'm going to root for him. Some people will do it. We have a caller who does that with LeBron. It's not my thing, but root for whoever you want to root for, however you want to root for them. I just hope, however it plays out, there's a resolution before August, just so we can push that to the side and keep it moving as we get ever closer to football. And we'll talk about some college football when we come back, because right now on the screen, they're doing the thing where they start to highlight games of the past season, because we're getting closer. And we'll get to some college football when we come back.
You're back inside the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
So earlier this week, it was the ACC who had their media days. Last week, I believe it was the Big 12. And today I saw Notre Dame on ESPN. No conference, so they can just sit down for a couple interviews with ESPN. I saw Marcus Freeman up there, CJ Carr. There was another player I didn't recognize. And a lot of the conversation about Notre Dame, at least last year, was not making the playoff and being denied at the very end when the committee decided at the very end. Now that BYU got out of the way because they lost to Tech for the second time, Miami and Notre Dame are now right next to each other. So we can actually compare the resume. And because one team beat the other, which had been the case since late August when they played in week one, or I think it was week one. It might have been week zero, but I think week one. Now we can put Miami ahead of Notre Dame, which got Notre Dame upset. They didn't even play in their bowl game. A lot of fallout from a scenario which was out of their control, and honestly, if the committee had just acted properly from the very beginning, none of that happens because Miami should never have been behind them when you look at the schedules and how comparative they were, even though Notre Dame had the long winning streak. If you just look at the records and who beat who, it should not have been this big of a debate. So Notre Dame had a two-game season last year. They lost to Miami and they lost to A&M in back-to-back weeks, and they were playing catch-up the rest of the way. Their season this year is very much the same, except it's just a one-game season. You start to look at their schedule. They have the ACC scheduling agreement they have, but the only team of any real consequence, at least before the season begins, is Miami. It'll be the rematch. It'll be in November. It'll be at Notre Dame. The rest of the way, it's Wisconsin, Rice, Michigan State, Purdue, UNC. So it's not exactly a schedule that is highlighted by big-time opponents. So Notre Dame could go 11-1, and they'll likely be in the top 12. And with the new caveat, I guess I'll call it, that we found out about at the end of last year, as long as they're ranked in the top 12, they're going to make the playoff. There will not be a scenario where some non-Power 4 team gets in over them because they win their conference or the top-rated Power 4 team. That would be someone else's fate because Notre Dame is locked in as long as they're in the top 12. And it has a schedule that doesn't have a lot on it. So if they were to lose that Miami game and finish 11-1, the committee would have to move them down, I think, because no one's going to be happy with Notre Dame being granted a spot when you look at a schedule. Oh, you know what? They do have BYU. We'll see how good BYU is. But that's about it. So they popped up on my screen, Marcus Freeman, up there along with his star quarterback. It'll probably be one of the weaker schedules of all the contenders. And now you do have the playoff the rest of the to determine how good you are if you have to go through three or four very good teams. But I would just pay attention as we start the year. The conversations about Notre Dame and their schedule is going to be brought up quite a bit. And if BYU doesn't have a good year, it will likely come down to the Miami game if they make the playoff or not. I don't think people will have the appetite for an 11-1 Notre Dame making the playoff with the schedule the way it is, particularly if there's so many other teams people think are deserving. And then you throw in, as I said, the guarantee of a top 12 finish getting them in. That's a conversation that likely will go on throughout the year. It'll be one of the storylines of the year. The one team in the sport that simply needs to be top 12 and nothing can take them out. Not even the threat of a group of five, if you want to call it that, non-power five or non-power four champion. So I think the SEC is coming up here in the next couple weeks as far as their media days, and then you throw in the Big Ten as well. It's July 17th. Someone tweeted out that it was yesterday that we are only three Thursdays away from football. and then after yesterday, it's only two. We're close. From we're talking about preseason football, but if you thought it was a long summer, not that long at this point. You're desperate for football. You're going to get it pretty quickly, and that includes the Texans. We did some Texans stuff yesterday with where some of their players ranked as far as how many first round picks they would get. If you missed it, CJ Stroud would get two first rounders plus more as far as draft compensation. AJ was surprised; he thought he was worth one, and it has plenty to do with what we saw his final two games. But the league itself isn't as swayed. But he's not a guy who sits at the top of compensation wise. I believe yesterday I read that it was Josh Allen with seven. He's tied with Patrick Mahomes for the top list, or the top of the list of guys who would get first round picks if their teams decide to trade him. The number of first round picks, I guess I'd say. Some other Texan stuff. DJ Bienemy, who's a frequent contributor on this station, has filled in with Vic Sarge. Also has done weekly hits with the station. He wrote an article today, and it was just a point of emphasis article about what the Texans have focused on. They didn't do a lot of 11-11, 11-11 pure, 11-on-11 in the middle field, of course, according to him and what he was able to see. It was situational football. This was a team that was hampered with not scoring touchdowns, pre-snap penalties, motion penalties, things that took potential points off the board or put them in spots where they were in second and long and third and long and short-circuited drives. It's one of the reasons Kymie Fairbairn kicked so many field goals and kicked so many long field goals. So that was their focus with their new offensive line and their second-year play caller. Lance and I talked about it this morning. The influx of new play callers on the offensive side of the ball and defensive side of the ball in the NFL. And Nick Caley is not among them, but he certainly is someone under a microscope. And what he does in year two is going to have a big impact on what the Texans are in year, what are we now, four of D'Amico Ryans. And there's a precedent already set that if the play caller isn't good enough, they'll get rid of them in short order. It's the pressures of having a quarterback you believe in and not seeing him live up to his potential. Nick Caley's got a lot of external pressure. Whatever the internal pressure is, that's for the Texans to decide. But from the outside, that's a guy who, I won't say coaching for his job, but it needs to go well for him. There needs to be some sort of improvement, because I would imagine the Texans GM and their coach believe they've done enough with the acquisition of Dave Montgomery and the drafting of offensive linemen and trading for them or signing them, that they put themselves in a good spot, and the OC has to get their quarterback in a spot where all of it comes together to go win and win big. Year four of this, they're done trying to be a good football team. They want to be a great one. So if you just look at who they are, you point to their play caller as a way they find their ceiling, because the floor is pretty good. They've shown that the floor for who they have been has been a playoff team and winning a game. What's their ceiling? And that's about Nick Caley and CJ Stroud. All right, we'll go to break. Hour one is done. We'll come back with hour two. Remember, Michael Curl is here with us at 11:30. So if you got questions for him, you certainly can hold off. The number is 713-780-3776 if you want to get in earlier than that. We're closing up here, at least the first hour of this show here at East River 9. We're in Birdie's, the Ice House, Birdie's Ice House. Come join us. The promo team is out here. Get yourself a shirt, and it's a white shirt, so it's a little lighter. We know it's hot outside, so if you want something you can wear around and not be hot, we got a shirt for you out here. We got koozies, some stickers as well. So come on out here and join us. We're out here all day. We will be back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.